You know ID in the D in the L day. ID in the D in the F E A. You know ID in the D in the L day. ID in the D in the F E A.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you with an emergency pod after the Seattle Seahawks had it all the way, defeating the Dallas Cowboys 38-31 in Week 3 at CenturyLink Field.
Can I get a hello to your 3-0 Seattle Seahawks?
Please don't with your speakers. It's going to blow out the speakers with your microphone.
You know it's going to be a good podcast when we've been fighting before the podcast.
That audio quality.
Starting on the very last play, the very last meaningful play, when Dak escapes from that sack and launches the ball to the end zone, are you expecting there to be a wide open Dallas Cowboy?
Oh, 100%, of course. I mean, look, I had watched the previous 59 minutes and 48 seconds of the game, so I had developed certain opinions, especially like it seemed like he probably was down, and then for him to get out of that and just be unpressured and throw into the end zone. Yeah, for sure. I thought the game was going to be headed to overtime.
It was like it feels like it's a play that we've seen countless times, where every single emotion up and down that you felt throughout the entire game is brought to life in this one single play, and you're like, yes! And then all of a sudden, it's like, no! But then he breaks out of it, so you're... the fortunate thing about it was, if this wasn't a situation where the Cowboys needed to throw to the end zone, which... Importantly, shouts to Elton Robinson for that sack on the previous play, which made the Cowboys use their last timeout. The Seahawks might not have had everybody there in the end zone because the Cowboys were basically in a Hail Mary type situation.
I mean, coming up big on the two biggest plays of the game. Like, sure, yeah, Russell Wilson threw 5 touchdowns. Great. Yeah. The heroes today are Elton Robinson and Ryan Neal.
Ryan Neal!
Who obviously we had all heard of and knew all about before today. I definitely did not have to check out his Wikipedia to find out any background information about Ryan Neal. That totally did not happen.
It was one of those situations that you see them like promoting Ryan Neal throughout the week and you're like, gee, I hope we don't have to hear anything from him. And then to have the game-clinching interception.
I mean, he wasn't even the first person they promoted in the secondary, was he?
He was farther down the list. Also seeing Shaquem Griffin making a play on making that huge tackle on that last drive as well. It was like, wow, this Seahawks defense is down to it. So getting to that very moment, I mean, this felt like a classic Seahawks shootout, right? We've seen it maybe a few times this year, but this one to me was the most Seahawks of any game that they've played this year.
I mean, what even is a Seahawks game anymore? I just, like, all the crazy shit that happened in this game. DK getting the ball punched out at the 1 yard line for a touchback, which that rule sucks. But, you know, DK's still got to be better than that. The sack fumble of Dak, the long touchdowns. I mean, just, like, so many things happened in this game. So many emotional swings.
It was kind of like everything that we expected to happen happened, which was the team scored a lot and the secondaries were terrible and gave up a lot of big plays. And then sandwich in between was so much craziness.
A safety because of the fact that Tony Pollard, the Cowboys return man, just dropped the ball and recovered at the 1 yard line. Like, I mean, there's just so many things. You know, also the number of Dallas penalties that loomed large in this game, including the one on the two-point conversion that allowed the Seahawks to make it a 7-point game. Just a lot happening here. But in the midst of all of that, Russell Wilson, the movement, it's like it's over now. I am conceding that, as Jimmer said on Twitter to us. Like, the Seahawks are letting Russ cook, and he is cooking, and... The meal that he cooked up today featured, again, 5 touchdowns. It was a 5-course, 5-touchdown meal.
The most incredible part about this game is that throughout it, Joe Buck and mostly Troy Aikman managed to criticize Russell Wilson like a lot, which I will grant that he was not, he didn't have the sharpest game that he's had, especially this season.
But the standards are very high.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously the standards in a game that you throw for what, how many passing yards did he get to in this one?
315.
315, five touchdowns and no interceptions, no turnovers. And they managed to somehow criticize him and talk on the last drive, I think as Russell Wilson was throwing a game-winning touchdown to DK Metcalf, about how they hadn't established the run.
I mean, when Russ went deep to DK, it was like a little concerning to me. It was like, I would like to see the Seahawks take more time off the clock the way that their defense has been going against the Dallas offense. But it was such another beautiful, like, we were kind of let down by the screen pans from Russell Wilson to throwing deep to a receiver. Not by anything Russell Wilson did, by DK.
The idea that being let down was out of, like, maybe five times it happened, I want to say, three of them led to should-be touchdowns.
Oh, at least, yes.
Think about the standards for that. Most passes don't lead to long touchdowns.
Well, that's my point, is it had nothing to do with Russell Wilson, who threw a perfect pass to DK Metcalf. It was completely out of his control what happened there. But we're used to the screen pan being undefeated, and here it took an L.
The worst long pass that he threw all game was the game-winning touchdown to DK, I think. I mean, that ball, when you see it going up, it was the first time, like you were saying, maybe even this year, that you've seen that deep pass and you're going, oh, fuck. Where it's like, oh, this isn't going to be a guaranteed touchdown or something incredible. I saw that pass and I thought to myself, Jason Myers field goal to go up and then Greg Zuerlein field goal to win the game.
I mean, one might point out the 3rd-and-1 last week against New England deep pass. That also, it was not
but
a perfect
I thought that
season.
Would be completed. When I saw that I go say. Up, I thought that was a catch.
Okay.
This is more just mentally what I thought in that moment. And then to see DK there, and look, it felt like the ball that he got punched out sort of hung over this entire game, which I don't know if it would have looked necessarily that much different if he had it.
I think Dallas would have been more aggressive. The Seahawks would have been more conservative. I think we probably end up in a fairly similar place.
But it just felt like it hung over the game. Like, everybody was waiting for DK to be blamed for it, and then for him to come out of that game and have the game-winning touchdown is just like, that's the kind of season that it feels like we're in. This is the exact same thing that we talked about last week. They gave up 7 points for nothing this week, in the same way that they did last week with the pick six to begin the game. And they still ended up winning, and still led both of those games by 2 touchdowns against teams who I think we can confidently say we'll probably both make the playoffs.
I don't know if we can. Well, yeah, I guess we can comfortably say that, I guess.
They're in the NFC East.
That was what I was had to go back to. The wild card chances are not looking so hot. There has never been a division in NFL history where all 4 teams went to the playoffs. The NFC West has a real shot at it this season. The other storyline of this game, though, besides Russell Wilson and then at the end the unexpected heroes for the Seahawks, the reason that those unexpected heroes were in position to make plays is the number of injuries. And in particular, it's like injury cascades because all the injuries are concentrated, you know, in the secondary, edge rush, and on the offensive line. Those are the 3, and now I guess running back would be the other one of Chris Carson.
You're starting to name a lot of positions.
That is maybe
there
a bit.
That many positions.
But like, I mean, I guess they have an injury at wide receiver with Philip Dorsett, but like that, you know, that group is healthy. The linebackers, well, you have Bruce Irvin if you count him as a linebacker.
Jordan Brooks also got injured.
Yeah. It's but you're stacking a lot of injuries on top of each other, still is my point, because you've got, you know, we find out this morning that Quentin Dunbar is going to be inactive. Nico Thorpe is also inactive. So all of that is what puts, you know, Ryan Neal in the position to potentially be out there, along with the Jamal Adams injury.
Do you think that there's any chance that they call Earl? Is there a 0% chance?
I don't think it's a 0% chance. I mean, first off, let's see, you know, what the situation is on some of these injuries, like the Jamal Adams injury, although groin injury has a tendency to linger, so that's discouraging from that standpoint. But also, he's, like, so entirely different from the way Earl Thomas plays that I'm not sure the Seahawks would want to make that drastic a change mid-season, even if it's something they've done before.
It's just a little bit too soon. If this was next season, they're calling Earl. That's the way of the Seahawks. You got to give it a little bit more time.
Yeah. And then offensive line would be another spot. You have Damian Lewis leaving this game. That didn't look super great. The injury that, you know, he eventually had to be carted to the locker room. Mike Iupati left the game. So specifically at guard, you had a series of injuries for the Seahawks. And the pass protection, part of the reason Russ didn't cook in the same way, even though he wasn't as sharp, the pass protection was also a lot more hit and miss than we'd seen in the first two games.
I really, in some ways, have to give credit to the Cowboys, because and their defense in particular. I would say that I expected less from them. But there were a couple series in the second half where they pretty comfortably shut down the Seahawks receivers and then eventually got home with a four-man pass rush. You know, and Russ had time on a lot of those plays, but he didn't have receivers, as the broadcast pointed out. And it wasn't like – and they did a relatively good job of containing Russ as well. Like, he never really – he had some nice runs and had a couple first-down runs, but he never really got off for a long one, and it didn't feel like that was consistently going to be a part of the game. Him running like the Cowboys defense in a game that they gave up 38 points. So I would actually say, and these are, again, the standards that we're holding the Seahawks to in 2020, they didn't play that bad of a defensive game, all things considered.
Even though they gave up how many yards to Dak Prescott? A 472.
No, this is the Cowboys.
Oh, the Cowboys. Yes. Yes. No, they didn't play that bad of a defensive game. They had the big bust, I think, on the Tyler Lockett touchdown. That was the one play.
Well, and the DK touchdown. But, I mean, they...
Oh, the original. The DK non-touchdown.
The DK should have been touchdown. The DK fumble. I mean, they had a couple of massive fuck-ups in this game, but...
That one, I feel like, was more a case of DK just making a play than it was the defense. Like, Tyler Lockett was running untouched through the secondary. DK was outrunning people. That was the difference.
In the Seahawks defense... They obviously weren't good in this game, and there was definitely a period where you're watching it, and it's like, this defense will – and they might not have. This defense will never stop the Cowboys ever again. Like, you reach that point in the second half, so getting – even holding them to that field goal that Zuerlein hit to put them up 31-30, it was like – this was such a huge play in the game because they score a touchdown there. It's a totally different climate if the Seahawks have to score a touchdown coming back.
And conversely, if they do score that touchdown, if then the Cowboys just need a field goal in their final drive.
Yes. So I think that was very huge. And there was a period where you looked at it and you're like, this, they'll never stop the Cowboys, even if this game continues for eternity.
Well, see, the clock has been their best defense the last two games at the end of these games. Like, they didn't stop the Patriots. It was only second down when Cam Newton got tackled. They just ran out of time. And same thing, like, Dallas did turn the ball over here, but it was only because of the fact that the clock became such an enemy for them.
But then being opportunistic, like the fumble, the Jaron Reed hit and fumble that they got leading into, are you yelling at the Heat?
No, it has nothing to do with that. That's an Alvin Kamara touchdown for my fantasy.
Oh,
game.
Fuck. Are you kidding me? I'm playing against Alvin Kamara.
I'm in a very tight-lit game in the Economist
Friends League. How many screens do you have in front of you right now?
I've got a lot going.
Oh, my God. You're like David Bowie in Labyrinth in there. Okay. But the opportunistic plays, like both of the turnovers, the initial turnovers that the Seahawks had directly led to touchdowns. The Shaquille Griffin interception at the end of half. I mean, that to me, I had just – as if, you know, feelings when you watch a game, we've seen a lot of football, you know how things go. I had a really bad feeling about this one at that point. And that Shaquille Griffin interception that turned into a touchdown to give the Seahawks an 8-point lead going into the half, that to me was like, okay, this is going to be the type of game where the Seahawks are going to be out in front. And then the big one to set them up for the score after the fumble and the hit was like, those two plays were huge that the defense made. In between, they gave up every passing yard.
I haven't updated the stats. So entering this week, the most passing yards the team had ever given up through the first 3 weeks of the season was 1,131 by the 2011 Patriots, who was pointed out by the listener Michael Dodd, made the Super Bowl that year. That was the year that the second loss to the Giants that they had in the Super Bowl. The Seahawks at that point, entering the final drive, had given up 1,246 passing yards to their first three games. So already more than 100 more.
Part of this is game script. That's the thing, is a good offense is going to lead to huge passing performances against
Correct.
Teams. There was a stat that I saw on Reddit that was, I think it was the Pro Football Focus highest ranked defense. Or maybe this was the defensive line, was the Eagles, and the lowest rank was the Seahawks. And I was like, well, the Eagles, this was at the time, are 0-2, and the Seahawks are 2-0. And now the Eagles are 0-2-1, and the Seahawks are 3-0. Like,
I don't know that that has anything to do with that. I mean, Pro Football Focus is grading individual plays. I don't think it's the same issue here. And
that's
also
not a good game script, but I'm saying there are things that matter a lot and things that don't matter a lot.
The game script thing would be, you know, Jim also tweeted us this. My former colleague Kevin Jackson pointed out that the Seahawks are now 9-0 under Pete when allowing 400 or more yards passing.
Yeah. So, we should be trying to allow 400 yards passing.
It should definitely be the strategy. But those are
it's the Ryan Fitzpatrick throw for 400 yards challenge next week.
But those are the situations in which Russ tends to cook, is when that happens. And it happens because the Seahawks are ahead the entire game.
And in 2020, if you're cooking the entire time, it puts a lot of pressure on the opposing offense.
The Seahawks also shut Zeke down.
For the most part. They were really trying to get him the ball on screens and stuff like that. Where it's like, okay, why are you doing this? Just throw the ball to whoever Trey Flowers is covering.
We're bailed out to an extent by the ineligible receiver downfield on the screen they threw the Dak that would have forced them to take their final timeout before they were able to use that to stop the clock on the Elton Robinson side.
Oh, yeah. At the time, I thought that was devastating. I was explaining to Luca how terrible it was because of not taking the timeout. And then Troy Aikman's talking about it. And it's like, yeah, we fucking know, Troy, okay? God. Oh, man. Do we want to go through this one periods of time, or was just too much happened in this game?
I mean, we may have forgotten some of it, including the fact that the Seahawks went 3-and-out on their opening possession.
A pretty brutal 3-and-out to begin the game.
That happened so long ago. Yeah, the sack, the incomplete pass where Russ got tipped at the line, which weirdly all of his passes have been intended for DK Metcalf this season. I don't know why that is. Sack on 2nd and 10 when they wisely passed, and then give up draw on 3rd down. Cowboys run 13 plays, but end up settling for a field goal on that one because the Seahawks finally got a 3rd down stop after allowing them to pick up a few of them earlier on the drive. Then you've got the Tyler Lockett touchdown, and we should pause here to note how awesome Tyler Lockett was in this game.
Oh my God. He's uncoverable.
9 catches on 13 targets for 100 yards and 3 touchdowns in this game for Lockett.
And usually those 4 incompletions are almost always on the receiver when it comes to Russ. They're either bailout throws or they're on the receiver. In this one, 2 of those throws were kind of on Russ. There was the one pass that was low that would have picked up a 3rd down, and then there was the one little pop pass that Russ had to try to get over the line that he just led 2 feet too far. But both of those were plays by Lockett that he was open in space. And just Tyler Lockett has the unique ability to both be fast and always be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, usually you're sacrificing route running ability for speed or vice versa, but you're not. There's no such trade-offs with Tyler Lockett. Like, he's going to do everything.
He really kind of fits all the roles. He's a slot receiver. He's a deep threat. He's a possession receiver. Tyler Lockett can do it all.
I mean, the other question about letting Russ cook this year is whether the increased number of targets for Lockett leads to him actually getting recognized as the elite receiver that he is.
He's going to get an MVP vote before Russ.
That was followed by the Tony Pollard muff at his own goal line. And then the Seahawks coming up with a safety on the first play thereafter. The sort of play that usually I feel like they don't call that a safety. They say that the running back got the ball out, which maybe Zeke did, but there was not enough evidence to overturn.
The white line is the end zone still if you're trying to score a touchdown. So is it out if it's a safety?
I don't remember the rule off the top of my head.
How many times has an opposing team gotten the ball at the one and we stand there with our heads over our heads before it in the motion of a safety, and they always get out of it instantly? Like one pass, 12 yards, and you're like, oh, well, nevertheless.
I think that's more
the safety.
I think this, I mean, the Seahawks have gotten more than their share of safeties. I could look this up, but I feel like they're strongly above average when it comes to safeties. Now, UW football, on the other hand, that has never once happened. The Seahawks with a chance
at first safety.
The Seahawks with a chance to extend that 9-3 lead, and then went 3-and-out again, and Dallas tied it up on an eight-play drive that was followed by the first of two misses by Greg Zuerlein. This, I believe, yes, this was the one that hit the upright and hilariously bounced backwards. That was followed by the DK Metcalf play. Teams trade.
He must not have known that there was anybody near him. Like, that had to be.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah.
If you can't see with your eyes that there is nobody around you, unless you have turned around and seen that there is nobody around you, you cradled that ball like a fucking baby into the end zone. I don't think this is going to be an issue for DK Metcalf again. And fortunately, the Seahawks won this game, and it is an amazing teachable moment for Pete on Tell the Truth Monday. Yeah. But, like, never again. Never again.
I mean, it's weird because DK does have a history of fumbling near the goal line, but, you know, not in a situation like this necessarily. That was followed by the most defensive stretch of this game. The teams had three consecutive 3-and-outs with a combined 8 yards between them. And then the Seahawks have an 11-play drive that is capped off by the Tyler Lockett touchdown on, I guess that wasn't play action, but from the 1 yard line. The first of three touchdowns, 1 yard touchdown passes in this game for Russell Wilson. The most in a game on record in NFL history, dating back to at least 94. Yeah, did you not see this tweet of mine?
It was the most 1 yard touchdown passes in NFL history.
Bob Condotta mused that it probably had not happened in any game, and then I was able to use the sports ref, the pro
Brady
football
had two
database.
Today also.
Did he?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, Mike Evans.
Mike Evans had two receptions for 2 yards and two touchdowns.
That is a stat line. Dallas answers that one with a 40-yard touchdown to
Cedric Wilson?
Yeah,
God. Ugh.
He just was picking apart the Seahawks secondary.
He looks legitimately good. My children are crying. I don't care.
Wow.
In the name of this football game.
Greg Zuerlein's extra point that time was blocked, allowing the Seahawks to maintain the unorthodox 16-15 lead.
There were chances at a scoregami at various points in this game.
I mean, there really weren't because of the fact that it ended up to adding up to the number of field goals. Like, you know, 16 is a pretty common score. 15 is a pretty common score. Three touchdowns and a field goal, five field goals. But, yeah, there were some odd scoring combinations in this. The Seahawks decide not to go for it on 4th-and-4 at Dallas 47 on their next drive with 1:10 left in the half, a decision that ended up being bailed out when Shaquille Griffin came up with that interception that you mentioned earlier. And the Seahawks then were able to punch that one in with a five-play, 34-yard drive with 7 seconds remaining in the half and take that 23-15 lead to halftime.
Well, just so huge to get a touchdown there instead of a field goal. Like, that series had field goal written all over it. And to punch it in. I mean, that's what the Seahawks have been doing all. Has Jason Myers kicked a field goal all season?
He must have, but there hasn't been a lot of them.
Yet I still have him on my fantasy team for some reason.
I mean, he's scoring a lot of extra points, I guess. So he's got that going for him. The very first play of the second half, I had forgotten this, was the Benson Mayo fumble recovery on the Jaron Reed strip sack. I thought that could have gone down as an interception for Mayo.
I thought it would have been an interception also, but
either way, it was
clearly out of Dak's hand. It would have. It's more fun to have a big man pick.
It is. Jason Myers has made one field goal this season.
That was in the Falcons game?
I think so. His only attempt of a field goal so far this season. But he has kicked five extra points. I guess it was five extra points today, right? Yeah. Or no, it was only four because they went for two.
Yeah.
So that the Seahawks then score from the five, another one-yard touchdown pass, this time to Jacob Hollister, and now have a 30-15 lead. Teams exchange punts.
This is the point in the game when the Seahawks are up 30-15, when me, as a stupid person, thinks to myself, this happens every week somehow, wow, the Seahawks are really going to win this game comfortably. I can't wait to do an emergency pod after a big victory.
Oh,
they're going to go undefeated into the bye. Every single week of the season, I have thought this at some point. And every single week, I somehow forget that I pay attention to the Seattle Seahawks.
How do you never learn? Because the other thing the Cowboys decided at this point was, hey, maybe we should stop running the ball and just pick apart this decimated Seahawks secondary. So a 52-yard completion to Michael Gallup on their first play of the drive, a drop by Ezekiel Elliott on their second play of the drive, a 42-yard touchdown to Cedric Wilson on their third play of the drive. And there you go. It was suddenly a one-score game again.
And I think we really understood in this game. I mean, we knew this going in. Trey Flowers is just not a starting caliber NFL quarterback. Like, the team rushed quick. They traded for Quentin Dunbar over the offseason. And despite the fact that he missed most of training camp, they basically ushered Quentin Dunbar into the starting position opposite Shaquille Griffin. And I think we understand why. But in this game, I mean, Michael Gallup is a very difficult receiver to cover, but...
And it's not like they're having a whole lot of success on the other side of the field with Shaquille Griffin.
But Trey Flowers in this game couldn't cover deep, couldn't cover underneath, couldn't tackle, and couldn't come up with an interception. Like, there was very little that Trey did right in this game. I think there was a play that Troy Aikman showed that he slowed down Cedric Wilson instead of actually making the tackle.
The Seahawks forced to punt again. Russell Wilson sacked on 3rd and 7. And... now you're starting to get pretty worried because this is, I think, the point that I chatted you. How is there still so much time left in this game? Because it had been going on for like 2.5 hours, and there was still time left in the third quarter. And the Cowboys marched the ball down the field again. This time it was a 43-yard touchdown pass to Michael Gallup. And they go for two to try to tie the game with 13:07 left. And that's one place where the Seahawks defense managed to stiffen.
It was about doing just enough.
Blade of grass.
I think there are a couple things at bay here that are helping the Seahawks so far in the season. Number one is opposing teams' unwillingness to let themselves cook right away. Granted, they spent a lot of money on Ezekiel Elliott, but we knew going into this game, we didn't even bring up his fucking name on the preview this week. I don't think it was just
it came up at least once,
but it was like what mattered in this game was Dak throwing against that Seahawks secondary. Like Ezekiel Elliott can you even imagine paying that much money to a running back and how little they actually matter?
Oh I can imagine it.
But like he did not matter in this. Anybody could have been back there, right? Like, he was not a factor in this game. What was a factor in this game, and we knew going into it what a factor in this game, was going to be how much were they going to let Dak throw against this weakened Seahawks secondary. And they took a little bit too long to get there.
There was a stretch here with the Seahawks. Then, you know, I mentioned there was back-to-back punts. There was back-to-back punts. They then punted a third time in this two-point game. A situation where a really aggressive coach like Mike McCarthy turns out to be might have considered going for this on 4th and 4 at your own 47-yard line after the missed deep pass to DK Metcalf that was slightly underthrown, I think, by Russ. So with 10:05 left, the Seahawks punt it back to the Cowboys, leading by two. The Cowboys run 16 plays in nearly 6 minutes off the clock, but are stopped on 3rd and 13 and forced to settle for the 42-yard field goal to take a 31-30 lead. And then it was time to once again put the game in the hands of Russell Wilson.
had to make it a fourth quarter comeback, just for good measure.
You go here, first and 10. Russell Wilson passed to Greg Olsen for 21 yards. Russell Wilson passed to Tyler Lockett for 5. Then you have Chris Carson run where he was injured. So that set up 3rd and 3. This was the another incompletion to DK. That was, I think, just a miss by Russ, right?
Yes.
Seahawks go for it this time on 4th and 3, just on the Dallas side of the football, Dallas side of the 50-yard line, I should say. And Russ finds Greg Olsen to 36 to more or less get into field goal range. And now you're starting to think about the clock.
This was the most important play of the game at the time. You know, the two.
I think it was period.
And possibly period. Like, picking that up, the game wouldn't have been over otherwise. Do I see the Seahawks stopping the Cowboys and getting the ball back? Maybe.
Not optimistic. I mean, maybe they would have run it 3 times. Maybe.
Even then, like, eh. So, this play was huge. And Greg Olsen just doing the classic finding a hole in the defense, sitting down, and Russ hitting him for that huge gain. It was one of those moments where you're watching and you're so tense going into the fourth down, and it's just like, oh, thank God. Okay, let's go.
So it would have been like a 47-yard field goal, ultimately, had the Seahawks, had Wilson not completed that touchdown pass to DK Metcalf, which is, it's a little iffy.
Oh, we're not feeling good going into that field goal.
But fortunately, that never came to pass. And then the final drive, the Seahawks did do a good job executing defensively, I think, on that final drive in terms of keeping everything in front of them, forcing Dallas to take a couple of those timeouts, and ultimately getting just enough pressure with, I think Bill Barnwell noted, it was 3-man rushes on those last two plays that were getting home.
Getting the pressure, I mean, obviously it's a weakened Cowboys pass rush or offensive line.
Yeah, we should have mentioned that, you know, the Seahawks, that was their second sack of the game that they ended up with on the Alton Robinson sack on the penultimate play of the game.
Well, there was the fumble by Jaren Reed. It wasn't a sack, but
that was listed as a sack.
Okay.
I think that was the one sack previously against a Cowboys team that was starting 2 undrafted rookies at either tackle position and also lost their starting center Daytree during the game. So they had their share of injuries too. Not really a performance that makes you feel great about the Seahawks pass rush.
Another week that we did not mention the name LJ Collier.
But no, LJ Collier did make some big plays in this game.
Did he?
Yes. He was pretty involved early. There was one play, I think, where he pressured. He's not going to be a sack guy. He's the new Red Bryant. That's what LJ Collier is.
There we go.
Which is not probably where you want to spend a first-round pick. But look, LJ Collier didn't draft himself in the first round.
Yes, the new Red Bryant. But there was some semblance of a pass. I mean, there was more of a pass rush this week than there was against Cam last week.
Yes.
So you have to feel slightly good about that. I mean, Alton Robinson looks fairly promising. And, you know, that's all there is to say about that.
To flip what you said about...
Most importantly, forcing the Cowboys... So they let some time tick off early, and then forcing them to use those timeouts. And that's really what was huge, is each one of those timeouts ticked down. The third one that they got, it was like, all right, here we go. Everything has to be the end zone now. You know, we've seen a lot of games that teams have been able to get to the sidelines and make those completions, but the Cowboys didn't get a ton of yardage. Like, this, it didn't look like what we could have nightmare scenario seen this drive looking like.
And it didn't look like some of the Cowboys' drives where they were dealing with the clock as an issue.
Yes. So they managed to do defensively on this last drive, I feel like they did almost as good as you could have possibly expected them to do.
And that was enough to move to 3-0 on the season. So, you know, we'll learn more over the course of this week about the severity of some of these injuries, which Seahawks will be making the trip to Miami next week to try to go for the 4-0 start. We also, on the weekly pod, we should shout out congratulations to the Seattle Storm for sweeping the Minnesota Lynx, completing that sweep this morning, and advancing to the WNBA Finals for the 4th time in franchise history. We'll cover that all on this week's pod. So.
And most importantly, just incredible that we got to see another week of Russell Wilson play football. Just an amazing thing to be able to watch for what this game took about 4 hours.
Five, 6 hours.
For
7 or 8 months.
On your Sunday afternoon. But a thing to be able to watch every week. There's a reason that we look at these injuries and we say to ourselves, I'm going to do the most giant knock on wood, that you see these injuries and you say to yourself, good God, what are the Seahawks going to do in all of these different places? But I don't think we're going into the rest of the season saying to ourselves, oh, I have any less of an expectation about this team going forward. And that is because of this incredible season that Russell Wilson is putting together through these first 3 weeks.
Let us never take it for granted.
All right.
On that note.
On to Miami. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.